And that's how we know it's official. That's the Facebook official for a BBA club meeting, is whoever that lady's voice is saying the recording is in progress. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming out tonight. It's not too cold yet. We are saving that up for Saturday. So good time for us to spend a night out in the chill. Right now, it's cloudy and not too bad. So, of course, that's why we're inside now. Everyone, would like to thank George Reynolds back there. Once again, our excited and engaged refreshments committee coordinator. He's got coffee and cookies. And do you have anything special tonight, George?
Tea, and I've got hot water for tea and hot water for Christmas.
Excellent. George was thrilled that we were able to be here in person tonight because the snow that was forecast for last night didn't amount to anything. We had a backup plan of going Zoom only. And by planning that, that meant that we were able to show up in person. So, yeah, that said, our illustrious vice president is presently on the road. Looked like he was pulling into a stop for maybe food or lodgings or gas. We're not sure. But either way, he's not going to have access to the club calendar. So, unless he objects, I'm going to go ahead and give a quick rundown of our next month's events. All right. I'm going to go ahead and do that and see if I can properly share. Can everyone see the calendar of events? Yes. People in the room. All right. If anyone can't, okay. Rich gave me a thumbs up. Great. All right. So we're on the 5th. Club meeting is here right now. Thank you all for showing up. Tomorrow night and every Friday now for the year is going to be Corn Watch. I encourage you all to come out there. The times on here are set to start at sunset, and they run until, I think, sunrise. It's going to say 11:55 or 11:59 on there, and that's just because the calendar gets weird when we have it span multiple days. But you have the if you go on to the event for Corn Watch, you will be able to download a copy of the permit. We have never once been asked for it, but I do recommend that you have it with you just in case the 9,000 police officers who park there, one of them decides to ask if we're allowed to be there. That said, Saturday, 5:30, we're going to be at Skywatch. It's going to be cold, but it's supposed to be pretty clear. So plan accordingly. Wear warm shoes, warm gloves. Some of you have space heaters. I'm thinking about bringing mine. Just remember, about this time last year, it got so cold, some of us were running laps around the parking lot to keep our feet warm. But the seeing conditions out there were phenomenal. I think that'll probably be the case again on Tuesday. You either get pleasant circumstances or pleasant viewing, and I guess it's going to be that one. You're going to see on the 10th of February, the Academy for something or other, ADL, their PTA is doing a star party night. I guess we can look at it real quick. Because I can't.
Academy for Discovery.
Thank you. Academy for Discovery, their PTA star party night. It was originally supposed to be this Tuesday, but with the weather, that didn't happen. Wednesday wasn't looking better, so they have asked us to move it to the 10th. Again, next Friday, we have Corn Watch, and there is going to be a planetarium show at the Chesapeake Planetarium that we have been invited to come out and support. We have also been given some clearance for those who are properly trained and know what they're doing to have the BBA operate the big C-14. So we the planetarium needs a little bit of assistance in running the big 14-inch telescope. And I'd like to think that we'll be able to provide them some assistance with that. On the 14th, we have Night Watch at Chipokes. I know that one isn't especially well attended, but we do have that one going. That's every month. We also have, I've started to post on the website, Stargazing of the Virginia Living Museum is a community event that is free for stargazing. Planetarium shows, they do cost, but the Abbott Observatory, they have their telescope up there. We can do some stargazing through that, or we can bring our own equipment. Not required for us to attend. It's just there for people to refer back to. We have the Joint Expeditionary Base, Little Creek, the Big Navy, the Campout Star Party on the 20th, which goes in parallel with Corn Watch. I recommend picking one. Trying to do both would probably be kind of tough. Got another pair of planetarium shows on the 21st at the Chesapeake Planetarium. We do not expect to do much in the way of stargazing at the 2 o'clock show because there's only one star that's going to be out, and only one of us present here is able to pick out other stars during the day. So Kent might be able to point some things out for us, but the rest of us not. Otherwise, the evening show will have the opportunity as well. On the 23rd, we have Trail Life Stargazing. That is in the Great Bridge area at a church. That event was pretty good last year. They asked us back. If I recall correctly, it was about 80-some kids, 50? Yeah. Yeah. I think, like, young Boy Scouts and older Cub Scouts, they're very enthusiastic but pretty well organized, so it's a lot of fun. They broke up into multiple lines. We did try to coordinate. Again, this is a best practice when you're doing outreach events. Coordinate amongst the telescopes. Who's looking at what object, especially when you have multiple lines rotating, because otherwise you end up showing them the double cluster 7 times, which Richard and I definitely did. On the 25th, George is going to be presenting his Valentine's Day edition of Astronomy 101 at the Kempsville Rec Center. Always a good time and a good opportunity for us to remember what it means to be an amateur. It means lover of, not necessarily that we're bad at it, which is something we need to always remind people of. On Saturday, there's two planetarium shows as well as Saturday, Sunday. Hopefully this one will actually happen. We've had a bad track record with canceling Saturday, Sundays lately. Please come on out. Even if you don't have a solar telescope of your own, feel free to come out. Take a look through ours. Take a look through what have you. If you have a telescope that you're trying to figure out how to play with, or if you're new to the hobby, or you know someone who is, Saturday, Sunday is a great opportunity to bring people out with their equipment so they can figure out how to use it during the day when you can see all the buttons and knobs and know how to put it together and take it apart and maybe get some help from people who've used that telescope or maybe built one before. Questions on February? Great. Quick survey of March. We've got a placeholder on here for a total lunar eclipse, but it's pending approval because I don't think we have a site locked down yet. Jeff, or do you have a recommendation on that one so far? Jeff may be fueling his vehicle or charging it. I'm not sure. Okay, so more to follow on that one. We don't know where that's going to be, but we'll get something out on the Night Sky Network discussion list because that one's coming up at the very beginning of March. We do not have a meeting here in between now and then. So we'll find that one out. A few other outreach events, one at Surrey Elementary School. We have one in Churchland. CPIS. Not sure where that is. We're going to find out. Maine?
Lane.
Okay. That makes way more sense. All right. So a couple more of those. We got Bird Neck Elementary School. There's a lot of outreach events are starting to kick up again, which is usually the case when we reach the spring months. We're in high demand by Earth and Space Science classes that are just now getting into the space part of Earth and Space. All right. Any questions on what we've gone over for the events? And I do apologize. You're going to hear my voice a lot tonight. Yes.
I don't think we're taking part in that.
Nice. As far as us doing a field trip to go watch it, when it's going to happen. That is a good point. They just pushed it by a month, didn't they? Past March 6th. That's a good thought. Let me jot a note down. We can definitely look at that. Obviously, this might be a good opportunity for us to partner with our good friends at the Surf and Rescue Museum. Although I think we need to do some nice things for them as well, considering they've done a few solids in our favor recently. But the Artemis launch is a good idea. So. That's a good call. The downside is those normally happen like 2 a.m., so that might be a bit on the late end, but we can definitely look at possibilities for launch windows. Good question. Thank you. Any others? Anything from Zoomland? Okay, and I'm going to stop sharing. Oh, I got three chats already. Oh, never mind. That's just Bruce. That's Bruce. Okay, that said, reasonable things, Bruce, reasonable things. I'm going to go ahead and turn the rostrum over to our illustrious treasurer.
All right. All right, we got $14,300 in the treasury right now. We started the year on January 1st with $13,270. And if you looked at the totality of 2025, we actually were flat. We started the year with $13,492, ended with $13,273. So, we were flat for the year. We're up. Yeah. All the renewals have been in progress. That's why we have a lot of money at the moment. We have some good expenses. This is the main thing for the treasurer in December and January is doing all the renewals. We have 213 members currently on the roster. We have four new ones since the beginning of the year. But I currently have 61 people who have not paid for 2025. So I've sent out multiple emails. They've had chances. I've had one tell me the check's in the mail. So I'm not going to delete them out. Give them some time. I did get some checks from Ben today. Who checked the mailbox. But which is pretty normal. Pretty soon by the end of the month, I'll be deleting about 60-ish people out. And we started new, but we have a lot of money. Our scholarships are pretty well funded. Primary scholarship's good. We're in the midst of Georgie June ticket sales, so that's going to get up to where it needs to be. I don't have anything else. If you have questions, speak now.
Questions in the room?
I have tickets if anybody wants to buy raffle tickets for the Georgie June scholarship.
Okay. So for everyone out in Zoom land, we'd love to sell you Georgie June tickets. You can buy them on the website or you can just catch one of us in person.
Yeah, there's nothing on the website that says Georgie June tickets. So what you do is just do a donation to the club and then in the note say Georgie June tickets and we'll get you enrolled. And that way I know what they are and can put them in the okay. Right buckets. What is the prize this year? I forgot. Something good, wasn't it?
The prizes are, we actually have two prizes so far. One of them, let me see if I have a ticket in the bag that shows it for everyone out there. So we've got a C-Star S50 as one of the prizes, as well as, what's not on here? A 17 millimeter Teleview nice eyepiece.
Solid.
Yeah.
Richard, I got a question for you, sir.
Yes.
Pretty big spike on the primary PBA scholarship. Can you attribute that to something? Do you see that sustainable? I'm trying to gauge what to do with that.
Yeah, we have 4,585. I have to open up last year where.
Yeah, was that a spike or?
We've been doing pretty good on. I think one of the big drivers is when the Virginia Beach school stopped, we stopped splitting Boardwalk Astronomy money with them. That was a pretty big boon over the last couple years. We're the 25 books. Let's see where most of them
are. And we're doing five of those again this year. We did five last year. And George very slyly managed to get us back into the honorarium for Garden Stars.
Garden Stars, yeah.
So
when we first started doing Garden Stars, which was close to 20 years ago, they gave us half of the receipts from the people paying to come in. But somehow that just sort of went away, and I never noticed it. Nobody ever said anything about it. And I just commented to the leader, the director, Diana. We used to get a little bit of money for that. She said, well, take that into consideration. And the next thing I know, they have me assign a contract for every 3 months, every 1 week, two. And then this contract says we're going to get $50 for each Garden Stars we do, which is free money. I mean, it was a surprise to me. I just sort of made a comment, not expecting anything, but it just it's going to work out. I haven't seen it yet, but we'll see it probably in another couple of months.
George baited the hook and got a bite. So
yeah. So just looking back, we got $2,500 from IMG for Boardwalk last year. You know, we spent $200 and we got $2,000 the year before. So that's covering our scholarship. So then everything else is just gold. Because we do get donations, like Eddie Paris does a monthly donation. You've been always throwing a few hundreds and so it just kind of adds from there. But really, really just the Boardwalk covers what we pay out. And then everything else that comes in is just gravy on top of that. So it just has been accumulating.
The difference last year is we did all the Boardwalks.
Oh, yeah.
That was what we needed because we got them all back.
Yeah, and I think that was the smart thing what Jeremy was doing. Even the weather was bad, he would go out there to say we were here and then leave. You know, so we get the credit, right?
Didn't he really stayed until at least 8 or 9?
Yeah, but matter what, you were like, I'm going there, even if we can't see anything, so that we get the credit, and we're not having a bad year.
Yeah. I think I would have phrased it a little nicer than that, but yeah, that's fair. We definitely wanted to have the opportunity to collect money for our scholarship fund. So
yes.
Yep.
Good job, man.
Yeah. You folks out there encouraging us all to do it. You had a question?
Well, I thought I heard a president say just trying to collect past dues from people for 2025.
2026? Hey, I suspect, yes, Rich. You're not trying to collect 2025 dues. You're trying to collect the
2026. You're right. We don't pay in arrears. We pay in advance. DSO, okay. Baby. We're driving positive DSO.
Okay. Any other questions for the treasurer or financial questions in general?
The less questions you ask the treasurer, the better. The less
it's a really alarming books, thing you bring to say, honestly. Huh?
I think a motion to accept the treasurer's report.
Seconded.
All right. Moved and seconded and thirded to accept the treasurer's report. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
What happens if you don't accept?
Good work, Rich. That's what, 43 of these consecutive that you've had approved? Okay. Mr. Secretary.
All right, I will be brief. So last week we were at Council Rec Center because DCC was still closed for the holidays.
Can Zoom land here? Okay, keep going.
You're good. Last month's was a pretty standard meeting. This far we had an amazing turnout. We had, I think, like 40 some people in attendance. At least close to that number. It was a lot.
Like bringing extra chairs.
Yeah. You know, I ran out of space in my sign-in sheet. Like we just went off the page. Jeff did the presentation. He did the presentation on the C-Star S50, talking about like what it can do, how it's the app, like tips and tricks for people who are new to it, which is nice. Also, sign-in sheets right there if you haven't signed in. People on Zoom in, you're exempt, but. It was a very nice presentation. For instance, there's an S50 up for the raffle price. That's really all I have. Though it was a great meeting. It was amazing to see so many people turning up for a meeting.
Okay. Any questions for the secretary? We did have to keep that one pretty short because the rec center closed on us, whereas we don't have that same pressure here. Just peer pressure to get us out in a timely fashion. Entertain a motion to accept the minutes as summarized.
So moved
and
second.
Approval by acclaim.
Aye.
All right, great. Thank you, Gabe. All right, I'm going to now turn over to the Alcor to discuss everything that's on his mind.
Okay.
both as Alcor and as East Coast Star Party pusher.
Hey, can everybody hear me okay?
I'm clear.
Okay, I'm going to attempt to share here now that Mitch has enabled it. Okay, can everybody see my screen?
We can see that you started screen sharing.
Nope. There it is. You see it.
Okay. All right. So for those of you that are new in the audience this evening, the Astronomical League is a nationwide consortium of currently 25,000 people nationwide at 300 clubs. Interesting statistics, as of 2023, there were 23,000. So we've actually grown 2,000 members in the last 3 years. So as a result, when you join the BBAA, you get awesome Reflector magazine. And I want to briefly run through again the recent recipients. We claimed Bob Barreline because he's a cool guy. He got Hubble 35th Anniversary Special Observing Challenge. And then my personal hero, Jonathan Sheets II, got the Globular Cluster Observing Program. And then lastly, Ben Loyola in the audience tonight is keeping the Earth safe from civilization's destruction by earning the NEO Observing Program Near Earth Objects. So everybody in there should, you know, congratulate Ben for saving the Earth tonight.
Thank you, Ben.
Okay. I want to run you through some things on the Astronomical League website, like I always do. At the bottom is an interesting section right here called the Monthly Sky Charts. One of the first things you can see there is the navigation chart for that particular month. So here's navigating the mid-February night sky. I always print these out, you know, when I teach an astronomy course and hand it out, because it's very beginner friendly and kid friendly. And it shows you how to star hop, you know, across the sky when you don't have Gabe there to help you. And so you can do it yourself with this piece of paper in your backyard. So in addition, they have an event once every month. Oh, hold on, let me make it bigger. I got a lot of windows open. It's a problem in my life. So Mercury and the young moon in the bright evening twilight occurs on February 18th. If you can actually pull this off, call me, because I've only seen Mercury a couple of times just because it's always very low. Okay. And so you can use that kind of finder chart to find that. And then there's an interesting document in here every month that somebody painstakingly puts together that I strongly suspect that Jeremy rips off for his emails of major astronomical events here at the bottom for everything that's happening in the month. But it has all the different meteor showers, their duration. If you're working on different binocular projects, they list out what's up that month in terms of easy, medium, and hard. And then the same for the Messier objects and other double stars, planets, all lunar events. So this is specific to the East Coast time zone is the one I pulled up. So there's one, you know, for every month. And lastly,
Bruce, can you show us how you got to that? There's a question from the room.
Okay. So what you do?
Your personal hero wants to know.
So what you do is you go to www.astroleague.org up here, okay, and you scroll down to the bottom here, okay, and click on this monthly sky chart celestial events tools right there, okay. And then here's all the different months where somebody painstakingly put all this together all last year. And at the top is the current month. So here is February 2026. And that first thing, the sky guide I showed you. And it in Espanol, navegando por el cielo nocturno de febrero. Okay. And then the young moon and Mercury is there as well. And then here's what's up, Doc, for the Eastern time zone, is that last one I showed. Okay. Does that answer your question? All right, cool. lastly, thanks to the wizardry of Mr. Sean Lozier and his awesome website and some very creative movie making on the part of Mel in the background here. This is the East Coast Start Party website. The East Coast Start Party for the spring is April, April 16th through 19th. Okay. So registration opens on February 14th, which is Valentine's Day. So you have 9 more days until you can start sending us money. Come out and have fun with us at Chip Oaks in April. I have already blown $200 on my budget for cool books. So thanks for the $800, and I'll spend at least $600 on cool prizes. Okay. And that's all I got.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. Any questions on either Astronomical League or East Coast Star Party topics? No? All right. And just with the implied comment there, implied accusation, I do not rip off the Astronomical League for my calendar. I rip off the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. And on occasion, if High Point Scientific has put their email out by that point, I will consolidate the two so you have something closer to one-stop shopping. That said, if there are other non-snarky Bruce comments on the quality of the monthly email, I would like to point out that the Back Bay Amateur Astronomers are always recruiting a new newsletter coordinator. And if you think that you would like to take a stab at doing a better job than me, I'm sure you can, and I am happy to turn that over. So please let me know if you're interested, or either in a trial capacity or ongoing. Yeah, not scheduled, but I appreciate that opportunity for the shameless plug. All right. Ben, do you have anything for the scholarship committee?
Yes, last report. Received notification that the city is going to fund the Nick Anderson Memorial Foundation Memorial Scholarship to $5,300 again. Oh. So that message is getting out to the Virginia Beach only teachers and science classrooms and such. And then based on the amount of money we have, our scholarship committee, George Reynolds, raise your hand. Reynolds there. I'm at the bottom, hello. We moving to do two scholarships, base scholarships, a $2,500 scholarship and a $2,000 scholarship. So we'll have a first, second, and third place prize, or very few people typically reply, even though we pump it out throughout Hampton Roads area. So we're being awarding just about $11,000 worth of scholarship, which is the biggest amount we've ever, ever awarded in the history of scholarship.
Awesome.
So that's pretty awesome for the size of this club and what we accomplished and the donation. Quite an achievement. So thank you all that contributed. And buy some Georgie June tickets. Georgie June, by the way, for those of you who don't know, passionate astronomer, public service, and always at the outreachy stuff. And sadly, we lost her too early in life, as well as Nick Anderson as well. Great astronomer himself and academia stuff. So lots of accomplishments, but we lost him as a member way too young. So any case, they've been memorialized in the scholarship programs. It's really a true recognition of their service to our club and really to the astronomy community, and as well as our core scholarship that we've had for many over a decade now. So it's as a point also, EBAA is a 501c educational institution. So corporate donations, personal donations, went off on your taxes, so you can give it to the IRS in Virginia, or you can give it to us. So it goes to a great, great cost. So your choice. That's a lot of reports. So
awesome.
That will have 3 scholarships. They'll be blasted out, and they're all due at the beginning of May 1st.
And so we expect to award beginning of June?
Or will we be first May, I give it a couple of weeks for the post office to clear out, okay. And then the committee gets together. Anybody else that wants to help, I'll put a word out. And then we review, we rack and stack them, score them based on the 500 worst essay, their SAT, ACT scores, and their GPA, and their teacher's write-up. All that goes into a metric to come out with a score, and then we rank them 1 to 3, and that's how the money goes out.
Okay.
So, any questions? If not, thank you all. Yes.
Is Virginia Beach Avenue awarded that scholarship then? Is Virginia Beach Avenue awarded the Manifest Scholarship?
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah, they use us to
we're the cool. They trust us. That's cool.
We're trustworthy. We're doing the money.
They do what we
All right, guys. All good news.
Okay, great. That is good news. Good to hear those numbers creeping up.
I would think across the country is probably the largest scholarship any astronomy club has ever given. I can't imagine.
I remember
a lot of associations, but I've never seen any, even much, much larger engineering association stuff, and giving away $11,000 in scholarships. Huge.
Do you have anything about the RRRC you want to talk about?
No, I have not engaged with that in a while. I have not.
It's still I just checked. There's one thing right now.
Good. Yeah, I can give a brief on that, dust that off, maybe next meeting.
Hey, Ben.
Sir.
If we're giving away this much money, I think that's worthy of a short reflector blurb that we can put at the beginning of some issue. So if you want to send it to me, I'll submit it.
Oh, absolutely. That's a good idea. Thank you.
Yeah.
Oh, the applicants are just unbelievable. I mean, like, we read this, the committee reads them, then get called, but they come in and we all get together and read it. The write-ups and review their report card, and in all the activities that are involved with this, it's just amazing talent, really, really, and home schools too. We review home applications. So,
are Virginia Beach residents that are homeschooled also eligible, or do they have to be Virginia Beach public schools?
They just have to get a teacher, science, SAT, ACT, and okay. 500 word. The Nick Anderson is specifically for Virginia Beach schools only.
Okay.
Public schools. The other ones are open throughout the enterprise. And we blast them out to all the things. And I will say that Virginia Beach does have, of all the public schools, has the best scholarship pool of all the schools in Hampton Roads.
Okay.
So you go there and students go there and scholarships across the country, they funnel them into that. So they got a really good program. Unfortunately, it's staffing and support and that kind of stuff.
Which is interesting because pretty much all the school districts in the area follow Virginia Beach, at least for, are we going to cancel school because of weather? Yeah. You'd hope that they would also follow their scholarship portal.
Yeah.
So, last night.
No more though.
Any other questions? Oh.
Yeah, I had a couple questions. So I am new to, attending meetings, and I am not that familiar with the scholarships, and I wanted to learn more about the people that the scholarships are for. So when I'm not seeing anything on our website. Am I missing something? I would love
we
to
do
learn
post,
more.
We do post the application on the website. Yeah, I'll upgrade that tomorrow or before next week, and I sent the webmaster to post it. I'm not sure the last year's is on there.
I thought we had a page to talk about the.
Yeah.
Well, not so much an application, but just to learn more about the people.
Yeah. It's all on there. The application tells everything. Yeah, plus a little
bit. It's on our website.
Well, when I applied to it, because I applied to it, I believe as long as you are a high school student, you can apply to it.
Yeah. If you go to.
It's on the back of the amateur on our website.
Yeah, I've got it pulled up right here.
Are only on there for a period of time.
We don't have Nick.
The Nick one is a new one, yeah.
Yeah, well, we need to put it back on there. So previously we have awarded those in conjunction with the city. Last year was supposed to be the last year we were doing it, so I believe we took it off.
I removed it because of that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. So
it was supposed to be an initial pot of money, and then they said, okay, we're done. And then all of a sudden, I even asked them, are we keeping it the same? I said, yes. Okay.
Yeah.
Bring it on.
Well, and if I recall correctly, previously it was like 1,000 or 2,000. And then they said, we're just going to put the balance of it in. Exactly. And that's why it got up to about 5,300 last year.
Exactly.
And they're redoing it at that full amount, which is great for the kids. I don't have any kids in Virginia Beach Public Schools, but I wish for those of you who do or know somebody who does, it's a great opportunity.
I got the scholarship page up now.
Yeah.
And then my second question was, do we have any scholarship opportunities for college students, like students that are already in college.
Good, great questions. Any other questions from the group? Okay. Thank you, Ben. Appreciate the hard work of you and the scholarship committee on this one. It sounds like we're going to have a lot of work ahead, or at least a lot of dollars. I'm going to go ahead and open up the floor for observing reports. Anyone see anything cool other than snow? Kent, you saw something cool?
Kent, you saw something?
No, come on. No.
My name is Kent Blackwell. Some of you probably know me. Does everybody agree with me? We love this cold weather. I don't see a lot of hands up. Oh, I love cold weather. I won't be there Saturday because I've got to be in Newport News for the convention. Seeing is awesome. Speaking of seeing, you know, after a quarter century of observing in a dark sky in Coinjunk, although it lives in the drive on the Coinjunk, put the KOB in my trailer, the only goal was 25 hours. So I had a quarter century of observing, but now I'm kind of stuck in the city. So a good alternative to deep sky optics, a pepper source. You could do that at, you know, 47 and 8th Avenue in New York. It's just really a lot of fun. And a couple of really good double stars up right now. If you look up in Gemini, Astro, that's a really easy double. I think it's about 5 arc separation. Fortunately, they're the same magnitude. So it's easy to do. Just turn around and look at Orion and then try to be brighter. Well, it's actually a little bit lighter separation. Castor. You know, the problem is primary is like first magnitude and secondary is kind of seventh magnitude. So it's really tough to see that. So while you're at Rigel, drop down to Orion Nebula, and everybody has seen the Orion Nebula. No, you look at the trapezium, you see 4 stars. Try to see 6. 5th star is pretty easy. The 6th star, again, although it's not all that close to ABCD, not all that close to the brightest star of the trapezium, but it's fainter, so part of the city. But that's a real challenge. You've got a nice telescope, at least a 3-inch telescope, a 4-inch is better, a 6-inch is even better. 6-inch refractor is even better than that.
A 25-inch is great.
Oh, yeah, it's called a 25. But actually, the bigger the telescope you get, so often the worse the seeing is, because you're going through a column of air this big. Instead of like a refractor, it's a column of Earth's atmosphere. So sometimes a refractor does better on planets. My 6-inch refractor does better usually on planets than my 25-inch does. So, no challenge in looking at double stars, though, with 25-inch. I mean, what you got. Anyway, what I'm going to talk about was splitting Sirius. Has anybody done that? Has anybody split the brightest star on this one? Yes. It's not easy. And the time to do it is now because the secondary is 11 arc seconds away from the primary. So it's a good distance away. If you wait till 2 or 3 years from now, it's going to be 3.5 arc seconds. Primary Sirius is 10,000 times brighter than the secondary. Again, they're not all that close now, 11 arc seconds. So I made an opening out of these. This is an Edmund RKEI piece. You might be, some of you might be familiar with this. That's a 15 millimeter. And I use this in conjunction with either a 2.5 or a 5X Barlow to get a lot of help. And basically, you look at this when you're competing. I just put a piece of black tape over half of the lens, and you wait until Sirius goes into the coping bar. And you don't have that brightness of that star, that 10,000 times brighter star in the secondary, and you don't see it. So you try it again. You don't have an equatorial mount. Do that again. 35 minutes later, I'm looking at all of this. I saw Wait a second, I'm sorry. Try it again. Yeah, you can turn the occulting bar just by turning that. So that as Sirius is drifting across the field of view, if you don't have a photograph, just keep Sirius in that occulting bar. And then you say, I didn't see it again. It's really tough. First night, about 2 weeks ago, I spent 40 minutes trying to see it. Two nights ago, 30 minutes trying to see it. Look back at my notes, and I've seen it numerous times before, but it's pretty difficult. I think it's the most challenging note. So.
Some color tells me about a yellow color I've noticed can help.
Benavia, or whatever his name is, he used a red filter. I tried that, and I said, okay. I didn't see it. I've tried it. Even a deep sky filter, they cut down the brightness of Sirius. Unfortunately, it's cutting brightness of tried that. I didn't see. Actually, I think the occulting bar eyepiece works the best. And you can make one of these, but you have to use an older eyepiece. And the reason for that is because you want that occulting bar when you look through here to be sharp, you know, have a sharp edge. So the field stop has to be on the outside of the field lenses. A lot of the neighbor eyepieces, the field stop is actually between the lenses. So you don't have access to putting the open bar making a nice sharp edge. So just put up a cheap eyepiece on early nights, an RKD or a Kellner or an arthroscopic, and try to make it pretty neat. Do it for 3 years from now. We are That's all I had.
A couple points about the double star by Redpick Quarry. That's pretty amazing. The Astro League has a certificate for that for 100 of them, and you'll get a pin. So I've done that one. And interestingly enough, though, Sirius is not more than 100. So it must be so hard.
The reason is too damn hard. It's too hard.
If you do the Astro League double star, you're going to draw a sketch of each double star and draw your notes about it.
My thing is boring, but it's pretty fun. Yeah.
Fair point. And Ken, how many pins do you think you'd be able to collect if you got one for every 100 double stars
you collect? You mean this
one? It's just started.
Man, you want to join us? Come on in. We don't bite. Oh. Any other observing reports?
I have an observing report.
You have to wait, Bruce. We had a hand go up first.
Bruce, okay.
All right, thank you, Bruce. I sat up on Groundhog Day in the snow, first for me, and watched the Regulus. So the moon passed in front of Regulus around 9 o'clock.
So I got tipped off to that Regulus occultation. I was going to go out and look at it. And about 3 hours before it had happened, I looked and the moon was so bright I couldn't see Leo, and it wasn't even there yet. Like, oh, I'm not. This is obviously not going to happen. So I used that as an excuse to not go out and go.
Yeah, I was worried about being blinded by the moon, but it
wasn't a problem. Okay.
That's why you have a moon filter, Jeremy. You just put the moon filter in there, and you just problem solved.
Or you make night piece difference.
Well, okay, yes. These are both perfectly valid options, but I was going with the stay warm inside option.
Speaking of the blinding bright moon, last week at Garden Stars, we had a waxing gibbous moon, and it was very close to the Pleiades. And I was barely able to get the Pleiades in my scope to show the people. Because of the bright moon, but at least I got it.
I think it's going to be in the Hyades here fairly soon as well.
Just go back to Bruce.
Yes, I should go back to Bruce. Bruce, over to you.
Okay, yeah, Kent, that was really cool. I might try to go do that myself. I went crazy back in December and. Bought a Celestron Origin 6-inch astrograph, and I was able to get a first light session in January at a undisclosed classified location at Chesapeake. So anyway, I'm pretty proud of this one. This is literally the first shot I took ever. This is the first light shot off the Origin. This is a 5-minute exposure. And I freely admit that I am trapezium challenged in this shot and will not be able to resolve as many trapezium stars as Kent Blackwell. But anyway, I look forward to some pretty great things from the scope. And those of you that see me cursing at this particular new toy at East Coast Star Party, I'll show you the ropes. Thanks.
We did actually do a side-by-side comparison between his Origin and S50. And while the S50 is great, and you should all buy raffle tickets for the Georgie June Scholarship, it blew it away. It also blew away the 40-minute-long exposure I took of the Orion Nebula on Virginia Tech's 0.4-meter telescope 20-some years ago. Just completely destroyed. So that Origin is a solid, solid astrograph.
Change your wallet, actually.
It blew my socks off. They just flew right off right in front of my witnesses.
That's why you have the heater out there. Joseph, you had your hand up. Do you want to have an observer report? I thought I saw your hand. Okay. Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Oh, I wait to the when you had me on the camera, I wait.
Oh, all right.
This is a recent observing report, but if you get a chance, split Antares. Antares is orange, but the dark blue. So you can actually color filter. If you see it, it's just.
Okay. Gabe?
All right. I'm going to stand up like Kent.
Yeah, great. That makes it a lot easier for me to point the camera at you.
So I believe, at Portland for Boardwatch. I'd say two sessions ago, there was a great turnout. Kent was there, Dom was there, a lot of great people. That night, though, I did something that's really hard to do up here because it's so a very, very southerly object, and I was able to get the center of the Fornax cluster through my telescope. If you don't know, Fornax is the nearest big cluster of galaxies to us after the Virgo cluster. There's about a really good telescope. You can see about 18 galaxies in a really tight field of view. Didn't see that much, but with a 10-inch, I was able to see about six in the same field of view. Barely, but they were like, it was very hard, very tricky to get them all in the same field. You can see six if you look very carefully.
He was kind of not waiting to look through it. I saw it.
Yeah, the Fornax cluster.
Very cool.
Yeah. This is not seeing that many galaxies in the same field of view.
And that was in your tent?
That was a tent, yeah.
Cool.
I'm adding it to my Southern Sky bucket.
Turtle bucket list is really not aspirational, right? In a way. Things to
my light bucket.
Oh, okay, that's great. All right. Any other observant?
Another plug. Yeah. The Astro League also has a cluster and galaxy certificate. So, all sorts of recognition for your great work. If you want to be interested, and they come with pins. So.
There are a lot of cool programs out there, and I'll tell you what: you get the you do one of those programs. I believe we pay of your dues $5 of it goes to the Astronomical League. We actually get charged $6 per person, but the club soaks it rather than increasing dues costs. Every time you get a pin, just the shipping on that pin is somewhere around $10. So in order for the Astronomical League to keep in business, plainly a lot of people don't go for the programs. We should be trying to cause them to have to raise their rates. So let's try and get some more of those observing programs out there. Put Bruce to work reviewing your notes to get those reviewed and submitted off. And I believe they were still advertising for some new coordinators. If anyone is particularly interested in trying their hand at being one of those people on behalf of the Astronomical League who reviews those observing logs and such, there may be an opportunity for that as well.
Yes, there's still an open call for observing program coordinators.
Some of the tents are really beautiful. The SCA tent is really
lovely. There are some really lovely tents. We should do show and tell one day.
I don't remember what
that's true. Yeah. And another plug for these new auto guiding, auto tracking telescopes that do everything automated. They produce these beautiful, beautiful images. They have the ability to actually provide a scientific contribution, specifically in asteroids, because you can download the files necessary to post-process them. So if anybody's interested in that, and you have one of these telescopes, I mean, I can walk you through it. But, you know, the JPL and all, basically the Minor Planet Center is always looking for data to add more points along the elliptical rotation of these asteroids around the sun, around Earth, near Earth, that kind of stuff, especially for the NEOs, near Earth objects. So if you have one of the robotic telescopes and you want to try a hand at it, you know, reach out, because you can literally upload your data and get published in a very important book.
Do you know if the C-Star is able to provide enough resolution?
Absolutely. Whatever really? They have seen, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, the limiting magnitude that you're pulling out of those images, doing four images, 4 minute exposure, 3 minute exposure, whatever, there's plenty of stuff out there. Everything's moving, the bottom line, as we all know.
Yeah.
But the asteroids are really moving, and the limiting magnitude is a factor. And with the software they have out there, it can extract the movement of the asteroids and create the ephemeris data that you have to upload to JPL on the Minor Planet Center. So, okay. Real scientific contribution is able by us amateurs all the time.
Awesome. Something to consider. And something to consider if you happen to win the Georgie Jones Scholarship at Apple, which you should totally buy tickets for. All right. And for everyone out there who was in Zoom land who is putting up with my unsteady cam, thank you for your patience. I got to find a way to fix that again. There we go. All right. Okay. I am not tracking any old business because we didn't really cover much business that we didn't suitcase last meeting. So we're going to skip old business. As far as new business goes, I do have RASC handbooks. I believe I have at least one that is unspoken for. So if you have an interest in the 2026 RASC handbook, 1 month is already gone, but a lot of the material that's in it is still very useful for the rest of the year. Please let me know. And if I owe you one that you have bought and we haven't caught up yet, please catch me after the meeting and I'm happy to put it into your hot little hands. Don't think we have Sandy here tonight, so we're not going to talk about library telescopes at this stage. We did get the first order via the website for BBA merchandise, like the shirt and the jacket that I came in with and the hat that we have. So we do have a ability to get more BBA themed apparel. There is stuff on our web store. I've also had a question go out about the possibility of getting fleeces. We don't currently have those advertised, but if there is interest, we can find a way to get those up there. These hats also aren't listed, but we can get those particularly listed if people have an interest. Cavalier Sportswear is our, it is. If you see something that we don't have advertised with as in with a specific price, but there's something that you want, reach out to us at info@backbayastro.org. We'll go to all of us that will handle that. We'll reach out to the company, find out what the cost is, and get you a quote. And then we try and bundle orders so that they don't overcharge us for nickel and diming them. So I would expect we're probably going to place an order in the next month or so, since we've got an order in. If you see something you want, either what's advertised on the website or otherwise, let us know. You can purchase that via the website through PayPal, or if you want to hunt one of us down, we will take checks. I've actually gotten a lot better at depositing them in a timely fashion. Thank you to all of you who have been patient with me in the past. Any questions on that? It's not really a point other than a reminder, but there we are. Okay. Does anyone have any other items of new business? John, that something, or are you
looking at me like, get off. Okay.
Show off that jacket.
It's incredible. Oh, yeah. This one actually is advertised on the website. A few of us have one. I know George has one in blue. I have one in black. It's a nice, relatively warm, light weather. This would not be sufficient on its own for this upcoming Saturday. I think it would be fun to get some Carhartt jackets and maybe Carhartt overalls with the BBA logo on them.
If you go to the Cavalier Sportswear website, you will see there are hundreds and hundreds of items. Yeah. We have six on our website.
Yeah.
So let's go to our website. I have a link there. You can see they have so much stuff. And if they're going to embroider it, we can order those just one. If they have to do the screen printing, then we need a larger order. Is what it comes out. To make it worthwhile.
Nice. These hats are really nice and light, especially if you're thinking about coming out and joining us on Saturday, Sunday, when the sun is a factor. It definitely is the difference between having a great time and having to stand in the shade of the tree because you forgot your sunscreen, which totally doesn't happen every month. All right. Okay. Any other questions? Before we move on to the feature presentation. Feature presentation maybe being a bit of a strong word, but you folks are stuck with me this evening. I will go ahead and take the opportunity while I'm plugging that to say if anyone is interested in giving a talk about any topic that you are aware of, I have a couple of people that I regularly put up to discuss. But if you're interested in giving a talk to the group, please let me know, and we'll be happy to get you penciled in on the calendar. There's a few folks here that I'm seeing that I know I need to follow up with to get upcoming presentations. So, but for the time being, hey, good evening, everyone. I see I've already lost one. That's probably a record for me, but that's fine. It's all good. So tonight we're going to talk about numbering the stars. I actually advertised this one in the monthly email as Beyond Messier, because everyone's familiar with the Messier list. Everyone's at least vaguely familiar with some of the other catalogs, but a lot of us don't necessarily know what they mean, where they're from, why do these things exist? In particular, those of you, if you can't see the eye chart, I didn't realize the font was going to be quite that small. I called this one an introduction to star catalogs for people who wonder why NGC 869 884, H and Chi Persei, C14, Melot 13, and Colander 24 are synonyms for the same two objects. Who knows what those objects are?
The double cluster.
The double cluster, yeah. It's listed in almost every list of interesting-looking objects in the night sky. Curiously, with the exception of the Messier list, which makes no sense, because it's exactly the sort of faint, fuzzy objects that you can see with your naked eye and that Monsieur Messier should have noticed, but I guess either knew what it was or didn't bother.
It's too obvious.
Is it? I mean, there's an awful lot of things. He listed Andromeda. The Pleiades are absolutely on there. So we came up, you know, we have all these different lists, and we have a lot of different ways. I'm actually going to turn off the lights.
Well, I think you need a jabber. A lot of different ways that we organize and catalog, because we are people of science, or at least... those are the opposites of the lights I'm trying to turn off.
There we go.
That's good.
Let's see. Light pollution. It's a problem, even when you're giving presentations. All right. And it looks like wide file format works really well for in here, which is something I should have known before I prepared this one in standard, but we're just going to have to deal with it. All right. So there's a lot of different factors that go into these, why we have these lists. There are a lot of lists. Some of them evolved because hundreds, thousands of years ago, we were just looking up and we saw a lot of stars. We knew what they were because we had stories for them. And then we kind of figured out what they actually were, and we started applying a little bit of scientific rigor to figure out, okay, what are all these things? What do they really mean? Why are they where they are? How on earth are we going to categorize them? It's sort of the same sort of problem that the biologists had to deal with. There's a lot of fish in the sea. How do we divide them up? Do we go by Pleiadism, which I guess is kind of what we're dealing with the main sequence of stars? Everyone's familiar with Pleiadism. It's a method of describing species, not by speciation and the general sort of classification in biology, but by
these things evolve from one another, and it's the taxonomy gets really wild, which is one of the reasons I was a physicist, not a biologist. But we made a lot of lists. Sometimes because we were still in the point of discovery, where we realized there was a lot that we didn't know, so we needed to find a way to put some words down so that we could categorize things and learn more and share. Sometimes because it was still new and exciting. Sometimes because it was no longer as new and exciting and we needed to solve particular problems. As a result, we ended up coming up with a lot of different ways to do things. You will find it sometimes that no one catalog perfectly encapsulates everything that you're trying to do. So you're going to find a new catalog, or maybe you're going to make a new catalog because, you know, we had a really great catalog, but there's some problems, some of the objects in it don't really exist anymore. Others aren't in the place that we thought they were going to be. So, you know, I'm going to make a new catalog, and it's going to solve all the problems. And we're never going to need another one until 3 years later, when someone rolled out a new one because we discovered, for instance, radio astronomy that didn't take yet all these other things into account. So every time we have a new advance, we end up with a new catalog, if not more than one. And every time we realize that there's a better way that we've organized, that we could organize things, we'll come up with another one. The great news is that this probably isn't done. Some of the newest catalogs have come out in the last 10 years. And with other new telescopes coming online, there are probably more things out there that are dreamed of in our philosophy or that fit neatly into the new general catalog and with the indices. So we're going to probably end up, probably in our lifetime, seeing yet another new comprehensive catalog that's going to end all the other catalogs for about 2 weeks. All right. This is partly going to be a history lesson. This is partly going to be a why are these all these things out here lesson. This is partly going to be a discussion, and partly it's going to be a sharing of trivia that I found while I was researching these things. If anyone has any questions along the way, feel free to ask. I may know the answer. I may not. I promise you I won't make it up. I will get back to you if the answer exists. One of the problems I had when I was planning this talk was figuring out how many catalogs I could talk about in the time that we have on the table. And since that sometimes is 20 minutes and that sometimes is an hour, it was a bit of a guesswork. I'm pretty sure I'm going to run out of time regardless, so that's going to be fine. I did, however, opt to not go back too far. I started with Bayer because it's always fun for me to start with Bavarians, largely because it's fun to say Bavaria, but also because most of the stars we go out and look at are going to have a name that we can assign with a Bayer designation purely because it's a visual, eyes-only sort of way to catalog the stars. Previously, stars had common names. Betelgeuse, for example. Don't say it three times. Three times it must be spoken unbroken. Otherwise, and then bad things happen. But whether you're talking about in Arabia or whether you were talking about in Scandinavia, the common name might be very different. That is not terribly helpful in an era of science, which we're starting to get into here in the early modern era, 16th, 17th century. So we needed a way to come up with a name for all the stars. Johann Bayer came up with a list. He said, all right, I'm going to take all these stars that I can see, all six magnitude categories, because of course there were only six at this time, and say, all right, the bright ones, because that's really where it came to. First magnitude was the bright ones. And it wasn't a 0.2 and 0.5. It was all first magnitude. So those ones right there, I'm going to give those the first couple of letters. And then the next brightness category, the next couple of letters, and so on and so forth. And of course, we did this in Greek because science was done in Greek at the time. Eventually, it became Latin. And of course, when he ran out of Greek letters in large constellations, such as, for example, Argus, which was later broken up because he ran out of letters multiple times, he started going into the Latin letters. Is this a particularly useful way to categorize by constellation and then generally how bright the star is? This is not a rhetorical question. It'll go way faster if people ask. Say again. It was useful-ish. It was more useful than what was there before. People could talk about a star in general by its classification, and then, okay, it's in this constellation, it's about this brightness, and then eventually people started to know which one was alpha, which one was beta, et cetera, et cetera. It worked. Did it work really well? Not especially, but it worked. It worked well enough that people could prepare notes internationally, and that was something pretty good. So we ended up with, oh, wait, that's not right. That is not Canis Majoris. No? All right. All right, so there's Sirius, the real one.
So we have different stars that have different names, but we can also give them their designations, and now we can all refer to them. Say it.
Oh, no. That's unfortunate. All right. So everyone fairly familiar with Bayer designations? Anyone not know that's what they were called? Great. You all are smarter than a lot. All right. We're going to go to Flamsteed. He looked at this and said, this is ridiculous. There is no dividing line up in the sky that tells me where the constellations start and end. Unfortunately, he didn't actually solve that problem. But it also doesn't tell me based on which one's brighter. You know, that's arbitrary. We didn't have the ability to do brightness measurements and calculations at the time. So Mr. Flamsteed, a fine English fellow, he comes up with his own method. And here we're using numbers, and we're using it not based on about how bright the star is, but based on
right ascension.
Where is it? Okay, so now we're getting into something that's a little bit more provable, a little bit more repeatable. It's always going to be in that same general location because proper motion isn't that fast, at least not for most stars. So he came up with something that is repeatable observationally based on an actual observation rather than just a value judgment. We move from something that is based on how you feel about the star into something you can much more readily measure, what the right ascension is. It's actually built heavily on Brahe's work, because Brahe created his own catalog and he came up with all these lists of stars. Flamsteed did was he took them and he put them in a capacity that you could actually refer to them. Now, is this, there's still some issues with this because it does measure based on right ascension. It does not account for declination. So are we going based on diagonal lines? And then again, it doesn't solve the problem of, well, the constellation border lines are sometimes a little bit choppy, let's say. They're not neat curving arcs, and they're certainly not spelled out in the sky unless you have some augmented reality glasses, which I believe did not exist in the 18th century. So Mr. Flamsteed came up with something that was pretty good and survives to this day because it was pretty good. So here we have...
Indicated. I read that last board. It's cut off by the
I'm not sure you can tell. I don't know if I can get rid of that. Can I get rid of the...
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, so this, if that's for me, I'm not here. So actually, he didn't get vindicated. It was actually... So his work was stolen, allegedly, by Sir Isaac Newton, who was at that time the director of the Royal Society.
Oh, interesting.
And Hubble. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So he started compiling this catalog, and he was trying to do a really good thorough review. He was looking at all these things. He was taking other people's work, and he was projecting like a good librarian would do in this particular case. And at one point, Sir Isaac Newton and Halley stole his work and published a catalog 3 years before he was read. And apparently, allegedly, there were 400 copies produced. He got 300 of them, burned them in front of them, and said, you just basically, and I paraphrase, you guys should be glad I did this because that work wasn't done yet. It wasn't verified. So you might be putting something out there that isn't true. So my hat's off to this guy for academic integrity. And apparently that happened twice, at least allegedly. Depending on which source you read, one or two said it was once. A few others said it happened twice. Actually, I believe his final work, the real compilation, was published by his wife posthumously, which actually does appear to be a bit of a trend.
So that should be a warning to all of us. We should be working on getting our magnum opi, for astronomical work published while we're still alive to reap the rewards. Otherwise, Sir Isaac Newton might steal our glory.
All right. So again, you're going to notice a pattern here, but these are all the same stars with different names. So we're only on, I believe, slide 7, our second major astronomer. We're in the 18th century, and we already have 2-3 different ways to refer to that particular star right there. So that would be Betelgeuse, and all hell's going to break loose. All right. Any questions on these two fine gentlemen so far?
Yeah, did the guy's wife make sure that everything was verified before she published it?
That's a great question. So she did not publish it herself. She worked with several of his compatriots, whose names escape me right now. But she worked with several other astronomers to make sure that his work was properly compiled and then published. So she observed his wishes regarding academic integrity. Great question. All right. This man needs little introduction and little discussion. So therefore, I'm going to kind of breeze over him. I would like to say that the Messier catalog, the most important thing to remember is that it was not a catalog for amateur astronomers. It was a catalog for people who lived in Paris and were trying to find comets to cross-reference to, basically. Hey, I found, no, it's on the list. He didn't find all of these. He worked with several other people in his lifetime. And like I say, it's not a particularly exhaustive list. We were talking about objects that aren't on it, the double cluster, for example. Maybe he just knew by looking at it. Yeah, that's a double cluster. That's not a comet. But the Messier catalog was a list of objects to avoid for those who were studying comets from the location of Paris. As a result, it only covers some things that are in the northern sky. It is possibly the most Parisian catalog possible. If I can't see it here, it doesn't exist, or at least it's not worth worrying about. Which, you know, at least I give them points for consistency. You could think of it as an accidental checklist, and I think a lot of us view it as a aspirational list when you're getting started. Hey, I want to find all of these things. They are, as it happens, we're in fairly close to the same latitude as Paris. So all the things that Monsieur Messier could see, we can see, and a few more, because we're a little further south. So it's a great starting point as you're engaging. Yes? That is a good question. I do not know the size of this telescope. I want to say it was a little bit bigger than that, because at this stage they were building larger ones, and he did have Louis XV's assistance, but I will find out. Okay, well, I mean, if you want to do it real time, I'm not going to do it here.
What's the issue between 110 and 103 again?
Sorry?
110 versus 103. Yeah, when you send the certificate, you're like,
wait, yeah, so he actually only saw 45 in his first version, then it went up to 80, and then eventually got up to 103 during his lifetime. Later on in time, people added to his catalog after he was dead. And also subtracted, you're going to see the number, I say 110, more classically, you think 109, because there's one object that's debated as to whether or not it existed, whether it was a duplication. 110 was the largest number that was listed, but it's probably actually only 109 objects, and that's going to come up again here fairly soon.
Oh, and Gingrich named that one M110.
Who?
The scientist, Owen Gingrich. Passed away about 15 years ago, but I met him on cruise, and he was the one that designated that M110. I always call that NGC 205.
How old are you?
There are plenty of astronomers later on here that are going to be in all of our living memory. George.
According to my Google search, Charles Messier primarily used small aperture telescopes. His favorite instruments being a 3.5-inch to 4-inch refractors and a 7.5-inch Gregorian reflector.
Okay. A Gregorian reflector. So does that answer the question? I can't actually remember where that question came from, but it was a good one. Oh, okay, fair enough. All right. So, yeah. That said, even though it was an accidental list, it's a pretty great list, which is fantastic for us as amateur astronomers, because one of the most famous and earliest individual lists of, here's some neat things to look or not look at, just happens to be a really great list. All right. So we're going to have a couple objects here. Everyone recognize all of our friends? Yeah, these should not be unfamiliar to you. And surprise, surprise, you're going to see some recurrences of these as well. Although not necessarily on all the lists for various reasons. All right. Now, we get to the catalog of nebulae and clusters of stars. This was, everyone familiar with the Herschels?
Yep.
Yeah. So this laptop does not, or this computer does not like my font choice, and that makes some of the things a little harder to read. But apparently I misspelled William. Fantastic. All right. So the Herschels siblings, not spouses, at least in this particular case, famous astronomers born in Hanover because Germany didn't exist at the time. But if it did, we would consider them German, except as Hanoverians, they also were subjects to the King of England, because the Elector of Hanover was also the King of England at the time. So as taking advantage of the treaties between those two nations, they immigrated to England, later Great Britain, and became English astronomers, starting out as Hanoverian siblings. These two people did catalog almost as many objects in the night sky as Hitler. The vast majority of objects you will find as far as deep sky objects or various stars that you will see in the night sky were discovered by William Herschel. Literally thousands of objects that he found somewhere, I want to say around debatably somewhere in the 6,000 to 7,000 number, maybe more, maybe a few less. His sister Caroline, also an accomplished astronomer, probably more accomplished as an astronomer than he was, because that was her really sole focus. She was a fantastic hunter of comets herself, to rival Monsieur Messier. But these folks, they cataloged in the sense that they looked at the star or the deep sky object, and they wrote down what it was and where to find it, and they filed it away. And they organized it based on class, and then what order they founded it. That is not a terribly useful way for us to find it, because it's not especially cross-referenceable, and finding H423, which one's that? Now, that said, I'm not great with NGC and IC numbers, and I know that Kent and Dave could tell me chapter and verse which one's which, and if you guys see errors in my slides, please let me know. I was pretty careful because I figured you both would be here, but I'm sure I missed something. But they were trying to discover. These were the folks out there with the celestial equivalent of a machete and a pin helmet, looking for new things they can catalog and bring back, presumably to the British Museum, because of course. The great news is they're still in the sky, unlike many other things that are in the British Museum. So they went out and they found a lot of different objects, and they concocted them and they published them. Did they publish them once? No. Did they publish them twice? No. They published many times, many different lists, talking about different types of objects, which is great when you're trying to learn. You're in the age of discovery. The early modern era is here. We are learning more. We are knowing more. Unless you want to reproduce it, in which case you then have to go and look it up and see what it is, see where it is, find out if you can see it from where you are in the world, and if you have a large enough telescope, because telescopes are getting bigger. That's why they were finding more things. Not the most useful. So if we want something that is useful, we're going to need to turn away from these folks. But in the meantime, we're going to look at some objects. These are going to look familiar, I hope. Does this notation look familiar?
No. Well, I know them. I don't believe what the objects are.
I hope so. What do you got?
I see a big double cluster.
Yes.
Star Nebula, Hilo Galaxy, Eskimo, and then I want to say
24 of 3 is the last galaxy.
I'm gonna check my cheat sheet right here. I think that's the Deer Lake. Yeah, it's the Deer Lake galaxy.
7331, man.
I don't know by the number. Let's see. 7331.
I don't know why.
Yeah. Keep an eye on these. They're gonna recur because you know there's a lot of.
I'm gonna blog. If you're really into this thing, Astro League has a Herschel 400 certificate. So
there's two of them.
Yeah, I got the 400, but I'd say it takes you through all this stuff.
Yeah,
it walks you through. It's really amazing.
So there's the Herschel 400 and the Herschel 402. There has not yet been a 3, 4, or 5. I believe in all Herschel's formal catalogs show 2,500 objects. There's others that he discovered, but that weren't in there because the way things go. But we're going to shift now from Herschel the Elder to John Herschel, his son, and who was the one who compiled the general catalog of nebulae and clusters of stars, which is different than the catalog of nebulae and clusters of stars. This one we'd refer to as the CN. This one we refer to as the GC, not the NGC, not yet. We're not there. We're still going back in time here. Now, John Herschel, a very famous scientist of his age, a major player in the Royal Society, and he studied a lot of different things. He did carry on his father's work and with the assistance of his aunt and continued astronomy, but he didn't stop there. He studied photography. He studied botany. He didn't only look at the northern sky where his father and aunt had to focus their effort, but he also picked up his wife and his three children and got on a steamer and went down to the British colonies in Africa with a 20-inch telescope to observe and catalog the stars of the southern sky, which is why the GCN is much more comprehensive. Not necessarily appreciably better organized, a little bit better organized. There was a little bit more numbering and indexing, but not great. He was still in that era where we have so much to learn, where you were still a natural philosopher, but also a scientist. And you were starting to specialize, but there was still enough to learn in all of these different areas that you didn't have to fully specialize in one particular area, which is why he could learn so many different things about so much different stuff. I like to think of him as an expeditionary astronomer. So he's putting this together. He does come up with a list. We're gonna use a lowercase h, that is the standard for the, no, I'm trying to remember. Words are hard. Yeah, for the GC. The GC series, we're dealing with lowercase h. It does stand for Herschel, just like the capital H did for the CN. But these are these objects. Anyone recognize these?
Same ones,
absolutely. Just have yet another different categorization. Okay. Now, we have, at this stage, a fairly comprehensive list of stars in the sky. Everything we can see with our eyes and things that we can see with what then was considered to be fairly large telescopes, what now we would consider to be something that Kent has 5 of and most of us have at least 2 or 3. Kent, I'm not picking on you. I'm impressed. My garage isn't quite that big. I have to keep other stuff in there too. But what we have is a lot of different things and not very much in the way of organization. How do I know where 1357 is versus 2098? I mean, I could look it up, but what goes together? What goes how? We're going to turn to John Dreher. John is our hero because he did the hard job, not the exciting stuff of going out and finding more things, but taking all the stuff that's coming in. All these objects keep getting found because optics are getting better. We're finding more and more stuff. How are we going to organize it? We need a list. John Dreher assembled and coordinated the first really major update to the GC, the General Catalog. And then he went to the Royal Society and said, hey, I want to make another one. I found another 1,000 objects. I want to put them in. And they're like,
This is a fine. I can't find a whole lot of references that say this conversation actually happened, but it's a cool story. One story goes, he said, I want to add another supplement. And they said, no. How about you make a new catalog? So that's where we go back to, obviously the problem is we keep finding these new things. We need new different ways. So let's make another one. I'm sure that's going to make fewer problems. So he compiled all this and put out the new general catalog, which lasted for 7 years before he had to come up with his own supplement, which was the index catalogs. And ultimately, there were two of those published. And we've been adding to them. And now there's the NGC-IC as well as the RGNC-IC, where they've revised it where, oh, some of these objects aren't where we thought they were, or this object doesn't actually exist, or we removed it because we thought it didn't exist, but it actually was there. So we're putting it back just with a new number because why wouldn't we do it that way? But this was a good expansion. And I would say it's withstood the test of time. It was finalized in 1908, and we're still using it today. I think that's pretty good. This is, I think, where we're at right now as far as general use catalog, which is why we have the name that we do. So this guy's my hero because he did the hard work instead of the exciting stuff to get there. But that leaves us with these. Some of these are going to be repeats. Makes sense because the NGC was founded based on the Herschel's list and Herschel's list, deliberately miscommunicating there, but then also adding in some additional things. So what we got right here?
Fireworks Galaxy,
and I hope everyone recognizes or said that. Absolutely. Bright and beautiful, or I guess dark and beautiful this time of year. So now we've identified all the things in the sky, right? This is going to be useful for every possible purpose, right? Right?
No. You know where this is going.
Well, yeah, we got more. All right. So, Edward Barnard. Now we're getting Americans involved. So, of course, we're going to get extra. That's what we do. Barnard existed in a time where astrophotography was starting to really explode. So we had a lot of cool things that we could see. And they started looking like, what is going on there? Everywhere we look, we find more stars, except in certain areas, the universe is empty. Well, Barnard, researcher, said that doesn't make any sense. So he worked with his partner, whose name escaped me at the time. Let's look at these areas. This doesn't make sense. It can't just be these gaps. I had an astronomy professor once who challenged us that why is it that everywhere we look isn't bright? Why is there a dark sky? And the answer is, of course, because there's a few different reasons. If you look down, there's a big rock in the way, so we can't see anything underneath our feet. But if you look out in space, you're going to see some areas where things are being obscured and other areas where the light just hasn't reached us yet. The universe does not appear to be infinitely old. Ergo, some of the light that's being radiated by stars that are in every direction just haven't reached the Earth yet. But he was looking at it from the perspective of, okay, well, what's behind me? Wow, it's already 9 o'clock. All right, I'll try and pick things up. He was looking at those dark areas and trying to figure out what they were. So in order to try and figure out what was going on, he had to look at a lot of different possibilities, different places. So he published in one of the scientific journals, on the dark markings of the sky with a catalog of 182 such objects. Was this intended to be a comprehensive list of dark nebula? No. It was an example of, hey, here are some things that I found that led credence to, basically, here's some the research that I did that shows me that this particular area, there isn't anything there. So what could it be? He used this as the baseline for his theorems on dark nebula, and it was a pretty compelling argument. So as a result, though, his list of objects and the plates from his original publication became the Barnard list. Gabe, you want to take a swing at these?
I mean,
I'm not as familiar with the Dark Nebula as I am with the rest of the NPCs, but mainly because you never see them because they're so damn hard to find. But I know that the Snake Nebula is B-72, and then of course the horse sits on there as well.
Absolutely. B-86, that one is the Ink Spot Nebula. B-92 is actually one of the Dark Splotch in the path of Milky Way. Was originally at one point called the Black Hole Nebula, but it's actually the Black Hole. And then B150 is a dark nebula in the Cepheus and Campbell part of this region.
All right. So, specialized list. All right. It makes sense that we're going to have some specialized lists that support that are really less about coming up with a list and more about. Advancing the particular science that's involved. So that's the only thing we're going to have, except it's not.
Enter Sir Patrick Moore. He created his own list. And of course, he's going to name it after himself. Sir Patrick Moore starts the list with C. Why? Because M was taken, actually. Exactly why. So his surname is Caldwell Moore, so he went with C for his list. He created the first list that was deliberately curated for amateur astronomers to see neat things. And he picked 109 objects that were neat and visible from all over, not just northern latitude, not just Paris, to specifically balance Messier's list. I think that's pretty reasonable. One could argue that, again, and I apologize for maybe reusing this joke, but the idea of taking things from all over and assembling them in one spot is, again, in line with the British Museum. But he came up with a list that did not have the same geographic bias. So, oh man, these look familiar too, don't they?
Oh man.
All right, well, at least they're pretty.
We got some new ones on here. C49?
Rosette Nebula.
All right. And I think that's the only new.
That's the only one.
Yeah, only newcomer. All right, I'm gonna speed things up because of what time it is. We're gonna look at Stuart Sharp list.
Actually, not a lot of information about him. He was, seemed to be a researcher. Not a lot of big personalities like some of the other people on this list. He was, we've now gotten into the, I'm no longer doing exciting pioneering work. I'm now just learning more about the universe. He was specifically looking at Emission Nebula because he was one of the pioneers for alternate wavelength astronomy, specifically looking at he started out as a graduate student trying to plot different emission nebula and calculating their relative distance in order to figure out what the shape and structure of the thing. Dr. Sharpless, well, at that stage, he was still Mr. Sharpless, as well as his team, for coming up with the idea that the Milky Way galaxy is, in fact, a spiral. So, pretty cool. That's the way they actually figured it out, I think, by looking at the distribution of these emission nebula, figuring out how far they were, recognizing that the general distribution of young hot stars has to be about the same throughout. So using that to basically plot out what the shape was and came up with the spiral. Not bad. Specifically, took most of his data from the Palomar Observatory, which is why we're mostly looking at stuff north of minus 27. He was specifically looking at that. He also captured a few others that were below that because the plates were available and it was not comprehensive. And he also captured some things that are not strictly hydrogen 2 emission nebula. There's a few planetary nebulas and supernova remnants that are scattered in there. Oops, you know, sometimes we get some things, right? But this one had a very particular reason. We were trying to advance the bounds of science and writing down what we knew about different things. This harkens back to those other days. I took all these photos off of Wikipedia. Downloaded them all. these are mostly Hubble, but yeah. Has anyone seen any Sharpless objects?
Of course, you would have, Kent.
Well, I didn't want to just aim it directly at Kent, but I was. The only one of these that I think I have seen. Is I think I have seen the Wizard Nebula. So it's SH2 142. All Sharpless objects are SH2s or Sharpless. I couldn't really figure out what the SH was, but I'm sure it's just because I didn't think to Google it just straight out. What is SH? All right. I believe this is my last group, my last catalog for discussion tonight, although by no means the last catalog, the Art Peculiar Galaxies. This guy is a bit of a character. Anyone familiar with him and his work? Did you meet him?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
Didn't meet Patrick Moore. I'll tell you about that.
Okay. So Arp, interesting fellow. He started out working in an American university. Went on to work at American Observatory. The Palomar Observatory, in fact, was the director there until things kind of turned pear-shaped, largely because he had some opinions and theories. He was kind of an anti-Big Banger. He thought that the idea of inherent redshift and, again, conflicting reports, but it looks like he kind of thought that there was inherent redshift in all objects, and some of the distant galaxies we were seeing that were in close proximity to quasars, we thought those quasars were being shed by exploding galactic nuclei. So one could argue that the Art Peculiar Galaxies list is a little bit of a catalog with an agenda, because it was in later years after he published it, he used his examples to put forth that theory. That said, the avowed purpose of the catalog was to collect data for the future. He looked at galaxies with odd structures so that we could look at them and start building up that index so we could try and figure out what galactic formation, change, evolution looks like, so we could estimate how galaxies would look when they're interacting. And in fairness, a lot of these objects look pretty neat. These are various galaxies that are in the process of merging, have merged. I thought about putting the Penguin Galaxy on there, which Dave and I convinced ourselves that we saw one night from Cornwall, even though it was, I think, 18th magnitude.
I think it was like 13.
13? I think we could have seen a 13. But so these are a relatively small list of peculiar galaxies specifically to collect data for perpetuity so that we could start getting things and then later on used for a particular agenda. Was that agenda because he drew those conclusions based on what he found, or he used those to advance? We don't know, and the man's dead. He actually retired early from Palomar because he was edged out of the observing pool, and later on went to work at the Max Planck Institute, where he continued to work for several more decades. So, you know, nothing shabby there. I wouldn't turn down an appointment in either of those locations. There's a lot more. I thought about including them all. We could have gone back as far as Brahe or further. We could go forward to some of the work that's being done today. But frankly, we're out of time. I'm sure that with the Webb telescope, we're going to find, as well as the
LSST, all that kind of
stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of new catalogs.
There's a lot. Yeah, there's going to be even more as those things, as the new telescopes that are coming on. Yeah.
Can I have a few minutes just on this topic to tie it back to a presentation I gave not long ago?
By all means.
So let me share.
I'll stop sharing.
Because I looked up, remember, about a year ago, I gave a presentation on T. Coronavirus, yeah, and how it's supposed to blow up, which hasn't blown up.
Yeah,
but in the variable star index, it goes, hey, here's all the other names of all the for this star. They're all right here. These are all these different catalog names for T. Corbor.
Yeah.
And if you want to go back to how things are named and funny, if you don't know how variable stars are named, because it started with Argelinger, because variables were thought to be unique or pretty rare, so he named them, the first variable in a constellation is R, the constellation. And he picked R because no Bayer number went past Q. So R was the first available, and there would never be anything past Q. So he picked R, figuring you would never get to Z. So T. Corbor is the third variable star discovered in Corroborales. If they had a proper name, it stayed. So that's why, like, Betelgeuse is variable. It doesn't have a variable designation. Beta Persei, they just keep their Bayer designations. Well, they quickly ran out when they got to Z. So they said, well, we'll go back to RR and then go RS, RT, all the way to RZ, then S, and then work that same pattern down to ZZ. Well, they got there pretty quickly and said, okay, we'll go ahead back and start back at AA. So it goes ZZ to AA, AB, and all the way down. They skip J. No one knows why we skip J, but there are no JJs. And then you get all the way, and they've quickly ran out of that. And if you do the math, there's 333 permutations that is available for letter designations on variables. So then they said, screw it, V334 constellation, and then they just keep going. And so some of them, like in Scorpius, they're in the 7,000s, you know, and there's, you know, it just goes on and on and on for thousands and thousands. So they have more names. There's more out there. It's amazing how many names. And of course, they're going to be in every single catalog. They're going to have a Gaia, a Celt, a Atlas, Iris, Tumas, you name it.
So I will say, Rich, when I was doing the research for this, I thought about talking about the R's for variable, but I couldn't figure out why it was they started at R. So thank you for filling in that
blank. Yeah, that's why.
That makes sense.
It was the, like, that was where the Bayers stopped.
Really, they should have made them J something, or just J a number, just instead of
that. There is no J.
There should be.
Yeah.
An opportunity.
It is. So if you find a new type of star, you can make it a J. But thank you for that plug to that previous talk. It was a great talk, and I'm still looking forward to T Corona Borealis.
Yeah, I wanted to blow up. Come on, man.
Maybe at the East Coast Star Party. Everyone should come out to the East Coast Star Party. Maybe we'll see it blow up.
Yeah, we're getting back in a good viewing time, you know. So.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you, folks. We do still owe a